I now have the great honor of introducing the Dean of the International Academy of Trial Lawyers. That is a position of great esteem. It's someone who is highly respected and honored by the entire academy, and it's a very difficult job because the year that one is dean, he has to prepare his dean's address to share with all of us. It's a moment of great honor in which we all take time to listen to very special words from someone who is very special to us. And most of you know Herman Russomanno and his wife Sally, and you know what genuinely wonderful people they are. They're warm and sincere and loving. But I want to tell you just a little bit about Herman before he comes up to talk, since obviously he won't tell you about himself. But Florida, I've known Herman for over 30 years. We both are alumni from the same firm, the old Freites, Floyd, Pearson, Stewart, Richmond, and Greer. Larry Stewart is a member of this organization. Many of you know him. And Florida has an integrated bar, over 50,000 lawyers. And it's a great honor to be chosen to lead the Florida Bar Association. And Herman Russomanno was the president of the Florida Bar Association in the year 2000. Did a fantastic job, but it gives you some clue as to how impressive an individual he is when the newspaper describes him as a 48-hour-a-day dynamo with a heart of gold. Herman practices in Miami with a firm that does complex litigation, catastrophic torts, mass tort type of cases. And he's somebody that, you know, if the high-profile clients know if they get Herman, they've got what they need. Herman is the past chair of the Civil Trial Certification Committee for the state of Florida. He's been named the Trial Lawyer of the Year in Florida by ABOTA. Herman graduated from Rutgers University with Phi Beta Kappa, magnum cum laude. He took his law degree from Cumberland, where following his law degree, he clerked for the U.S. District Judge Dan Thomas in Mobile, Alabama. He then clerked for the Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court, Justice Hugh Maddox. After his clerkship, he then was with the Bell System lawsuit with the Justice Department, and then came with my old firm, Freites Fay, in Miami, and started his own firm about 15 years ago. Herman's a fellow of the Academy, a fellow of the American College of Trial Lawyers, and a fellow of the International Society of Barristers. And he serves on the ABA Commission on Ethics. He sits in the ABA House of Delegates. He's on the ABA Committee on Professionalism. He's served as past president of a number of organizations. He's the past president of the Florida Bar Association, our Florida Supreme Court Historical Society, FLABOTA, which is the Florida branch of ABOTA, president of the Miami chapter of ABOTA, president of the Dade County Bar Association. He has had a number of awards, and I'll just deal with a couple of them, but the Supreme Court Justice Harry Lee Anstead Award, the David Dwyer Professionalism Award, the John Krupnik Florida Justice Association Award. And he serves in many charitable causes. Herman is the past chair of the National Conference of Christians and Jews. He's the past chair of the Board of Trustees of St. Thomas University, where he serves as an adjunct faculty member. But the greatest of all of Herman's accomplishments, and he's had a lot of great accomplishments, the greatest of his accomplishments was when he went home with one of his pals on his football team one day and saw a young lady that was 15 years old named Sally. He, big a lunkhead as he is, managed to win her heart. And all of you who know Sally know that she is a truly beautiful human being through and through. They've been married 38 years. They've got two children, two sons, two daughters-in-law, and two grandchildren. And the world is a much better place because of our dean of the academy, Herman Russomano.
Thank you, Mr. President, for those kind words and for your fantastic leadership and your steady hand in leading the Academy this past year. You and Priscilla were outstanding, and I know that I speak on behalf of everyone when we want to congratulate you for the absolutely fantastic year you gave us and our families. Can everyone get further? President Chris, First Lady Priscilla, fellows and new fellows of the Academy, esteemed spouses and significant others, special guests and friends, good morning. What a high honor and privilege to be the Dean of this Academy, to stand before you and to address and to give the Dean's address to the best trial lawyers in the world is an awesome responsibility. The fellows in the Academy and we all share a common goal, a passion for justice. We also take profound pride of our Academy roles, both past and present, of the fellows who have exemplified in their public and private lives the ideals of the legal profession. I salute all of you as you are the protectors of liberty and justice. Justice Benjamin Cardozo once wrote that the practice of law is a privilege burdened with conditions. And when we look at our Academy seal, the welfare of the people must be the supreme law. The Dean's address is about advocacy and the rule of law. And the term rule of law was coined back in 1885 by Professor Albert Dickey from Oxford in his constitutional treatise on constitutional law. The Dean's address has always been a source of inspiration to me. And I pictured the ultimate marathon race where each dean carries the torch of liberty and justice. And that torch for this academy started in 1954 with Melvin Belli. And for the past 57 years, the deans of this academy have had that responsibility to carry that torch, never drop it, and to have the responsibility to speak to you about the rule of law. And that torch was given to me last year by our international fellow, Michael Stitt, who in his outstanding address on the price of liberty traveled internationally as our dean's message has spread globally and has delivered it here. And it's my obligation next year to deliver it to our new dean, David Cleary, in Palm Beach, Florida. So when Sally and I also think about this academy, we think of love, laughter, and lifetime friendships. Sally and I are truly blessed to have you as our friends, to socialize together, to travel the world together, and to meet your wonderful families is such a joy. The better part of our lives has been spent with many of you. Abraham Lincoln once said, and he, a great trial lawyer, United States President, the better part of one's life consists of friendships. And that's what we have here. And as to our new fellows and significant others and spouses, you are family. We are one family. You have all enriched and enlightened our lives, and we thank you. This is also a historic moment for the Academy at this meeting. 57 years ago, three lawyers meeting in Boston at the Statler Hotel formed this organization. And 22 days later, in this very state, the articles of incorporation were filed. And the first headquarters was here in New York City. But this meeting has far greater historical importance, because at this meeting we have the historic passing of the gavel to the first woman, an outstanding trial lawyer. And in diversity, there is beauty and there is strength. Would we all please give a round of applause to our incoming president, Madam Bobby Puccini. Trial lawyers work hard, play hard, and we're lucky men and women because we love what we do. We're proud to be trial lawyers. Ted Koskoff, a great past president of ATLA, in his text, Essays on Advocacy, once wrote, "To all the trial lawyers of the United States who have left a drop of blood in one of the courtrooms of this country." Well, Ted's remarks, as far as this academy is concerned, have traveled globally. Our international fellows, who are kinsmen of the blood, keep our mission alive, the tradition of learning, of honor, of courage, and devotion. They take that torch of liberty and spread it throughout the world. Now, as trial lawyers, we all take our solemn oath when we're sworn in to the bar, and we raise our hand to make democracy work. This speech today, my address, is dedicated in grateful remembrance of my father, Herman Russomano, and to my beautiful wife, Sally, who I cherish. When we were called to the bar, we were asked to raise our right hand and to swear to support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state where we practice. In my case, it's Florida and Alabama. And we were taught in law school, and there's a quote, but we were taught in law school that the framers of our Constitution sought to create a democracy that would protect our liberty, work in practice, and endure over time. They saw the need for an institution that would patrol the legal boundaries that the Constitution created. Alexander Hamilton, as we read the Federalist Papers, studied the constitutional debates, the Anti-Federalist Papers, and what took place at the Constitutional Convention, Alexander Hamilton believed that the courts were best suited to exercise that power, not because judges were necessarily made wiser decisions, but because lodging the power elsewhere was more dangerous. Hamilton thought a president with sole responsibility for deciding whether his own acts complied with the Constitution would be too powerful. A Congress with that power, too, politically, would rarely strike down a statute that was popular. But the judicial branch, lacking both the purse and the sword, and being the weakest branch of government, judges were expected to ignore political pressure when they decided cases. And that was that great constitutional experiment. And 35 of our 55 founding fathers were lawyers. And they worked hard. And when we talk about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the right to trial by jury, we've learned all of that in grammar school, high school. Many of us were taught in that in civics. Is that the case today? Is that happening in our country? Has America lost its way? President Dwight Eisenhower once said, "Only America could bring down America." And as we go into this address, all of us have, and we all have a life story to tell. Gandhi said more than half a century ago, "My life is my message." My story about making democracy work started for me in 1989 63 when I was in the eighth grade. What I know about the values with my parents and what stayed with me then and now is what my parents taught me. To respect everyone, to treat everyone with respect and dignity and fairness. No exceptions. Although my parents were born here, my grandparents immigrated from Italy, came in New York, passed the Statue of Liberty, processed through Ellis Island, like so many other families. And although not formally educated, my grandparents believed in education, formal education. My mother, Mary, was an Italian professor and a social worker. And my father, Herman, was a trial lawyer, a legislator, an assemblyman, as they called him, and practiced in Newark, New Jersey, some 12 miles from this hotel. And what I learned from others is that I was told he believed in the three branches of government. He was a lawyer-legislator who believed in the Constitution. Now, I'm in the eighth grade, and like all boys, studies, sports, and girls were my priorities. I don't know if necessarily in that order, but in the spring of 63, everything was great. And I was heading to a great high school, and I had penciled myself in as the starting center fielder, halfback, track star, and wrestler, being taught by the Christian Brothers of Ireland. And back in 63, and I've kept it, many times as you graduate from elementary school or high school, you have autograph books. And on the inside cover of this was on my dad's birthday, he had written, "Daddy desires that you graduate from high school and go through the college of your choice. Good luck and good health. My desire is to attend your college graduation and see you receive your diploma, Dad." And back at that time, if anybody asked me, would I rather be a trial lawyer or replace Mickey Mantle when he retires as center fielder for the New York Yankees, the answer was obvious, center field. And after that, time continued to go. But some 34 days later, on April the 24th, 1963, my dad, never sick, died of pancreatic cancer. And your life changes fast. And a few weeks went by, and on a rainy Saturday, where I wouldn't be playing baseball, I was down in our basement. They have those basements in Newark, New Jersey. And I saw two boxes and a desk. And I looked at them, and I learned that they were my father's law books in his law firm desk. And my mother told me that those books were for me. And at that time, I had no idea, and I brought them with me here today, just some of them. I didn't know John Wigmore. I didn't know John Henry Wigmore. I didn't know Francis Wellman and the Art of Cross-Examination. I didn't know half of these books that started in the 1900s. And I read a passage then by Wigmore where he stated, "Every individual owes it to the next generation to pass onward the benefit of experience, the father for his sons, the older for the younger brother. And we know today the mother to her daughter and the older sister to her younger sister." Sally and I have the joy of having our two sons, Herman and Christopher, practicing, and they practice in our law firm. Our two daughters, in law, Suzette and Kina, they do defense work in two other law firms. And our two granddaughters, Tanaz, 10, and Mia, 9 months, 10 months and 9 months, are trial lawyers in training. And I'm told by a most reliable source, Grandma Sally, that they have already expressed their desire to travel on academy trips, just like our beautiful Anna and the other beautiful children of this academy. So I think we're going to propose a new, young, very young lawyers division of the International Academy, because we all are family. When my dad took the solemn oath in 1924 to make democracy work, if he were here, what would he and the people in this audience this morning think as to the state of the judiciary? If we were to study the face of the judiciary, what would we hear? President Searcy, fellows of the Academy, I am the voice of the courts in America, and I stand before you this morning on behalf of all state and federal judges to report that judicial democracy is under attack, that the right to trial by jury is vanishing, that budgetary cuts are crippling the courts, equal access is being denied, the courthouse doors are slowly closing. Our courts are in trouble. Federal judicial appointments move as slow as molasses. We live in unusual times, and those in this country, we need to obtain certain, with little understanding of our history and institutions, propagate falsehoods and misrepresentations. That has replaced honest debate in our society. Mark Twain's observation remains true. A lie can travel halfway around the world before truth even gets its boots on. I am here because there are problems in the courts. This is a wake-up call not only to the members of the judiciary, but to the trial lawyers. It's a call to arms. It's a call to action. We presented, trial judges, testimony a few weeks ago to the ABA, talking about the budgetary problems with the civil justice system. One of our brother courts in New Hampshire had to close down civil jury trials, suspending them for 1 year because of the lack of funds. We're told that in Los Angeles County, over 500 people were laid off, furloughed, because of budgetary problems. I've been told that this academy has wonderful programs, that you spread democracy to other countries. I've been told you travel to China, to India, to Italy and India, and Ireland, to advance the rule of law. And many of you have been told, talk about when you host delegates and you bring them to certain courtrooms in this country. And many of you who had China delegates told of the story, and I believe of it, a Philadelphia courtroom, where a Chinese delegate looked and heard what a jury does and how they deliberate it. And at the end of the trial, spoke to, and I believe this was to President-elect Pacini, that she got it, that they knew what the jury system was all about. And as these great programs continue, and delegates continue to come from China and other countries, what happens if one day you go down to the courthouse and it's closed? Or we have the courts open 4 days a week, or 3 days a week, or not at all? Part-time justice is injustice. Dr. Martin Luther King talked about half justice being not full justice, injustice, and that's what's taking place. So as you look forward, what are other things happening in states? South Carolina, 0.3% to fund its judiciary. New York just had a $170 million slash from its budget for the courts. Florida, 0.7%. And yet, when you look at what's taking place, this assault on our Constitution, and just Florida alone, court-packing legislation, where a group attempts to pack our courts, where in the 30s we heard criticism when FDR was packing courts. Here they attempt to create two Supreme Courts, move from 7 to 10, and have two courts and appoint three justices. And if you really talk about whether there's any sincerity in judicial funding and whether you should scale back, to add three more justices cost $1.5 million apiece. Is that the height of hypocrisy? Or is there another mission? They seek to strip the court of rulemaking power, divest the bar of all attempts to participate in the judicial nominating process. And we fought this back in Bush v. Gore in 2000 and defeated it. But it's here today, much stronger. Bills go through and constitutional amendments go through the House, and Florida is just one example. In South Dakota a few years ago, there was a group called Jail for Judges, and that this group fought against. Because if judges make unpopular opinions, there's ramifications. This is not America. You know, I clerked on the old Fifth Circuit, and there were some wonderful judges. I call them unlikely heroes, people that saw their lives, their reputations, their friends go away from them because they stood tall and made important decisions. And decisions are not always popular. And what one day you may be in the majority, we all may find ourselves in the minority. And that's what the courts were for. And we need your help. Now, with regard to what can be done, I just leave you with this. You need to decide and ask this question of your children and grandchildren. Will they know the profession as we have? Will they be able to dedicate their lives to the benefit of others? Or has the golden age passed us by? We've come to the academy to seek your help. If you look at the granite and you look at the picture of equal justice under the law and you look at our courts, we have a justice gap in this country. One of every two calls to the Legal Services Corporation goes unanswered. Millions of dollars have been slashed from its budget. And if people are unable to go into court to represent themselves, that's not what our Constitution is all about. So I've come this morning, the short time allotted to me, to make our plea from the courts. Your Honor, I am the voice of the trial lawyer. We hear your plea. We are here to help. Here is what we propose. We know that civics in 29 states of this country is not being taught. And when they stop teaching civics, people stop testing for civics. And it's sad that almost 75% of our high school students, when they're asked to name the three branches of government, respond by saying Democrat, Republican, and Independent. And while that may be funny, in some ways, we should cry. When students do not know what the First Amendment stands for, that it protects freedom of speech, when you hand students something that's called the Bill of Rights, and to the public, to the American public, and they think it's some type of communist document. That is scary. But what do? We know that we can start in the schools, because years ago, and I call in the height and probably the greater generation, many of the fellows in this academy no longer here, were able to go into schools, and it was proud to be a trial lawyer. Nobody even ran away from the name. Groups today, and thank goodness this group doesn't change its name. We're proud to be trial lawyers, not to keep some type of a disguise. And they were respected as pillars of the community. And they went into school to teach civics. And that's happening again. The ABA has its Academy on Civics. It's a commission that's been formed. And it's readily available, and you can go into the schools. And this is not only the high schools, but the elementary schools. ABOTA has worked so hard, Your Honors, with regard to their justice for the people going into the schools. And every single group needs to make it their business to educate and teach. Because remember, what happens is that if you're uneducated, that's when tyranny begins. So those are just some of the things that are happening. We're moving across this nation, working with the National Center of State Courts to get the truth out, not only about our constitutional government, but to talk about the vanishing jury trial. Case filings are down. If you study the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Justice Department, the National Center for State Courts, falsehoods are being perpetrated as to the number of cases, and that are there's a clog and congestion of civil jury cases. It's not true. It's simply not true. And we need to let people know when judges have a few trials a year compared to before. There's absolutely nothing wrong with going to a jury and to verdict. And the way things are being taught, that every case must be disposed of in some other manner, is not what America's about. We have the right to continue to hear a knock on the door when juries return verdicts. We have that right. The citizens of this country have that right. And it should not be denied to anyone. As the voice of the trial lawyers, we have to take some type of inspiration. But what we do have, and as I conclude, we have, Your Honors, and to the fellows of this academy, some great leaders. And if I can just show you some of them that have come here, that have fought for liberty and justice. It'll take a moment, but it's well worth it. And, Your Honors, it's not that group alone. There's 500 additional fellows that have the judiciary's back and are willing to work. Now, times get rough. And one of the books that I received from my dad, and this was a book of poems. And incidentally, these books have always been with me from the time Sally and I left to attend law school, to the different places we've traveled, to my law office, and this book of poems even followed me into the Army. But there's one particular poem by Maltby Babcock that I think applies today to our courts. It applies to trial lawyers, and it applies to society in general. And the name of this poem is Be Strong. Be strong. We are not here to play, to dream, to drift. We have hard work to do and loads to lift. Shun not the struggle. Face it. 'Tis God's faith. Be strong. Say not the days are evil. Who's to blame? And fold the hands and acquiesce. Oh, shame. Stand up. Speak out. And bravely in God's name. Be strong. It matters not how deep entrenched the wrong, how hard the battle goes, the day how long. Faint not, fight on, tomorrow comes the song. And as we conclude, there is a point of inspiration, and I think it's appropriate. 70 years ago, the great Joe DiMaggio hit in 56 straight games, the The record remains unbroken. And there's a book about Joe DiMaggio when people know so much about him. But one thing you may not know, unless you read a book, Joe DiMaggio and the Last Magic Number in Sports by Costo Kennedy, is that Joe DiMaggio loved Superman comic books. He adored those comics, but he was too embarrassed to buy them. And his roommate, Lefty Gomez, would always have to go up to some of the stores, especially on road trips, to purchase those comics for him. And Lefty Gomez once said to Joe DiMaggio about the way he played, "Why, Joe, you're just like him, Superman. No one can stop him. You're everybody's hero." Well, there's so many heroes in this room. And Superman, as you know, and I'll talk about superwomen and supermen, that he was able to leap tall buildings, he was more powerful than a locomotive, that he fought always for what? The never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way. That's what we do as we leave here today. So, Your Honor, as you look at those champions of justice and the other fellows here, this organization is with you in the courts. We are with you. It will not be easy. But we will prepare for the trial. This will be the great trial of public opinion. Social media and every other network needs to be used because there's no room for failure. And so, as we conclude, Your Honor, please send this message to you and to all of your colleagues that the fellows of the Academy are all inspired by a love of the law, a passion for justice, and a sympathy for humanity. Trial lawyers, Academy trial lawyers, will fulfill our solemn oath to make democracy work. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.